Right, we're here, podcast number 12 or 13, wow. Somewhere in there.
12.
It's racking 12. Up. 12, racking up.
I remember number one.
I have. Man. I think I do as well. I think it took us about 11 tries to record number one.
One actually took 11, attempts.
And it was somewhat because of us not knowing what to say, but mostly because I could not understand the technology for some reason. Things just never seemed to go right. I don't know what the issue was.
Crazy technology. Yeah.
But anyways, we're here post Kansas game, heading into the to Bedlam. Obviously, talk a little bit about both. Start off, I guess, recapping Kansas a little bit. I'm gonna take a back seat on this one because I ended up in a situation where I was listening to the game on the radio, so I don't have a great feel for what happened. Still haven't watched the hard version yet, so I'll defer to Royal and Cincy here for the Kansas review. So Royal, take it away.
Well, the first quarter looked like, and I wrote about it, looked like it was week one all over again, basically. I mean, the guys, you know, came out kind of flat, the defense especially, and Kansas was just moving the ball. one of the things, and of course the announcers, you know, Kansas only got 90 whole yards on Nebraska the entire game. They got 90 yards on OSU the first drive. It's like, great. That's a sweet little
here we
game.
Go. Yeah.
So, but then, you know, after the first quarter, I mean, that's pretty much, the guys just seemed like they got pissed off and just were like, all right, that's enough. Here, we're just going to completely dominate now. So they didn't score another point the rest of the game, and it was pretty much like clockwork. Other than, I mean, a couple of drives stalled, and there was obviously a couple missed field goals by Dan Bailey, which is a little scary. And, Sam, it's really crazy because you didn't get to watch it, but, I mean, if you would have seen the field goals, I mean, the way they came, the ball came off his foot was just fucking ugly. I mean,
yeah,
it was like the second one especially looked like a wounded duck. It, like, turned completely sideways and just hooked off to the left. I mean, I don't know what happened.
That's concerning. Yet. It's really concerning. I don't know.
It seemed like after that second one, like, the look on his face was just kind of dejected. And it was just like, oh, man, now it's getting in his head.
Kickers are kind of like golfers. Like, the mechanics are always the same. It's all mental. I mean, the whole thing is mental. It's kind of the same mindset. Hopefully he finds a way to turn that around, obviously.
Yeah, no joke. And the wind obviously played a huge factor, but at the same time, I mean, if you had seen this kick, there's no way the wind messed the kick up that bad. I mean, it looked really, really bad. But, anyway, other than that, I mean, obviously, Whedon had a huge game, almost 400 yards passing and 3 touchdowns. Blackman was good for his usual, over 100 in the touchdown. Kendall went over 100. Joseph Randall, I thought, was a stud. I mean, obviously, he usually is, but, I mean, two particular plays, I mean, that one for his touchdown, I mean, the guy just stretched over the end zone, just barely got the nose of the ball over the goal line, and it was pretty funny, actually. The two plays were actually called short, and then they reviewed them and then gave it to him on one that was a touchdown, and the second one was a first down.
They were both early. I mean, I was listening. But, I thought that was strange. It was like it almost sounded like the same play.
Yeah, it pretty much was. But, I mean, you know, the guys, you know, I think that a little bit they came out flat and probably just – and Holger said the same thing. You know, it's human nature. You're probably going to let down or relax a little bit when you have a game like that's sandwiched in between such an emotional win like Texas, and then you have Bedlam coming up next week. And that's, you know, in the last podcast, this was kind of afraid of happening. But thankfully, it only lasted for one quarter, and then you guys ended up turning it on. And, you know, now we're 10-1 and going into the final game of the season for the South title.
Yeah.
Yep. Cincy, anything to add?
Well, I think the thing that's just most impressive, the defense has just done it all year. You know, you look at the Troy game when they came up big defensively at the goal line, and they really, I think the turning point of the game, I think there were two. I think, you know, the first was definitely the goal line stand where they stopped Kansas short, turned it over, And we drive, you know, 98 yards and unfortunately couldn't get in the end zone. We kicked the field goal. But that was huge. And,
that was the longest drive of the season, by the way.
Yeah. And so the defense just comes up big again. And, God, they've just done it all season, you know. It's just it's kind of strange. You know, you get down in the red zone, you know, defensively. And, it's kind of hard to look at it and think, you know, don't worry about it. You know, these guys, they're going to come up big and something's going to happen. They're going to force a fumble or they're going to pick it off or they're going to stop them. And, you know, I was kind of thinking that watching the game, and sure enough, they hold them. So that's really encouraging. I think defensively, you know, we did get off to a slow start, but we definitely turned it on. And I think we limited them to something like, you know, 20 yards or I don't know exactly what it was. I think it was less than that in the fourth quarter. So definitely turned that on. And then the other point I was going to make is I really think you're seeing kind of the torch being passed from Hunter to Randall. I mean, I really think there you can kind of see it. Randall's getting more involved, and he's kind of you can tell he's got more confidence when he's running. He's making bigger runs, bigger plays. They're giving him the ball when they're close to the goal line. They're letting him get in the end zone. So I think we're going to be in good shape from a running perspective with Randall. You know, Kendall obviously has a couple of games left, hopefully three. And but, you know, you look at guys like, you know, Randall, you look at Jeremy Smith, Herschel Sims coming in. I mean, we are going to be stacked at running back for many years to come. So
I like the difference in Randall and Hunter right now. They're a nice contrast to each other. I mean, if you need 1 yard, I don't trust Kendall nearly as much as I trust Randall.
No. No.
Well, you got Jeremy Smith more. Too.
Yeah, yeah. And, or Smith. And
that's all three are different. Yeah.
Wasn't it in the Kansas game, or am I remembering two games back where I think it was just this last week when Kendall got stuffed on fourth down, wasn't it?
Yeah.
He did. Yeah.
That wasn't his fault, though. That was the formation. We were in the time.
It
didn't work.
And the third down is when he should have got it. He actually tried to cut outside in the backfield when he could have just lowered his head and gone straight ahead on the third down play. But
I really wouldn't be surprised at all to see Randall in these final games to be the go-to. You know, Hunter's going to be sort of your workhorse. He's going to get you the yards. He's going to get you. You know, he's going to move the chains. He's going to keep the clock running. He's going to on the ball. He's going to have good totals. He's going to score. Randall's going to be the guy that comes through a big place with short yardage, big third downs. He catches the ball well. That screen, it will work. They've got that down to a science.
Yeah.
Whedon draws the defender enough. They all kind of commit to Whedon, you know, thinking they're going to get the sack. And he dips it off. And Randall, I mean, there's 10 parts of wide open spaces.
I have a question about how did Anium look? I mean, I heard him. He had one catch. I mean, they didn't mention his name a lot on the radio, but I like that he's playing. I like that there's someone else that really has to be accounted for out there. Was he running good? Was he playing a lot?
I didn't know.
His jungle blocking was good. I think that's the one thing that's always been, he's always been good with is. His effort on field blocking. He realized that, you know, if he doesn't have the ball in his hands, he'd still be extremely effective on the field. And I think Holgerson at one point in time said that Anium was actually the best downfield blocker he has in his core of wide receivers. So he opened up that Joseph Ray touchdown. He was the one that opened it up so that he'd get down to the goal line. So even if he's not catching them, I think he's doing a really good job of, you know, filling in the holding role.
Yeah, and, I mean, just like even when he's not catching the ball, he has to be accounted for. I mean, really, Blackman obviously is accounted for. Cooper takes a little pressure off him. And then outside of that, I mean, Bowling's been nice, but I don't think Bowling really scares anyone. But Anium has to be accounted for. With, I think we were all hoping for Tracy Moore to be that guy this year that was going to step up and be that compliment. But I really like when Anium was healthy and was in there and had to be accounted for. It'd be nice to see him back. And speaking of healthy receivers, I mean, I guess hopefully Blackman's not limping around. I mean, with his ankle injury, he was fine after it, and he's supposed to be practicing tomorrow, but I guess he was in a boot today on campus.
I think that's just being cautious.
I mean, I assume everything sounds like it'll be fine. Gundy in the press conference today said he considers the team right now to be the healthiest they've been all season as a whole, which is nice to hear. Going into the last week, that's hardly ever the case.
Well, it's crazy because it seems like, you know, at the very, very beginning or even in the preseason, it seemed like, you know, I mean, we were getting injuries and it was just like, oh, here we go again.
Yeah.
And then it turns out that, you know, throughout the entire season, we've really, really been fortunate not, you know, having any key injuries. I mean, usually, you know, you're good for one or two during the season. And, I mean, we lost Dan Lowe and Victor Johnson. But other than those two, I think those are the only two real significant injuries. And even those guys weren't starters. So.
Yeah, I think Jarka missed like one game, maybe. I mean, there's nothing prolonged.
Right. I think that was right. It wasn't anything season-ending, and it wasn't anything for a very long period of time. Although the other thing from the Kansas game, just to backtrack really quick, the one thing that was probably the most disappointing was all the damn penalties, all the stupid, mindless personal fouls, and oh my gosh, that was just killing us.
I think it's a conspiracy by the Big 12.
Oh, thanks, Bo Pelini. Nice for you to chime in.
Well, can't Janasa just not control himself?
I don't know, man.
How many penalties has he been flagged for helmet to helmet or hands to the face? It's chronic. Yeah, it's unbelievable.
That's a hard thing to teach a defensive end. It's in their blood. They're just beat into their head for years and years and years to get at that quarterback, keep your hands up, swat. It's such a fine line. I mean, not that it's an excuse, but he's just got to give it like 1% less right at the end. You know, it's just that little extra that he does.
He tipped that pass. And he knows he tipped it. I mean, it went off of his hands. And after he was done tipping it, he kept going forward and just shoved the quarterback on the ground.
Yeah.
I mean, it was obvious that, you know what I mean, he'd done enough to just stop the play. He still went through the quarterback.
That was on third down? No, the Gent one was on third down that continued the drive and they scored. Was the Gent hit out of bounds?
Right. Well, I mean, in essence, they all continue the drive because it's an automatic down. So, I mean, it was so ridiculously stupid. It just made no sense. Like, you already stopped the play, and you're not even hitting them that hard. You're just shoving them to the ground. There was no point in him doing it. It was just a frustration thing.
Yeah. Silly, yeah.
All right.
But obviously can't do that against OU this week.
No.
So, good segue into OU.
Well, maybe you can. Like, early in the game. Just to kind of...
Let's break it in half a little, I think, though. We'll obviously wrap it up with some overall, but what do we think about – I mean, I think – are we all agreed we're going to move the ball on them? We're going to score our 40 points or whatever?
I think if you move the ball against Nebraska, you move the ball against anybody. I mean, I don't see – I don't think the OU defense is at all as good as Nebraska. I think their corners are undersized. I think Blackman will have an absolute field day. Yes, I think we'll move the ball at will, honestly. I don't think it's going to be an issue.
I think that they cheat a lot. Like, their corners and their safeties, they play on the line a lot, and they blitz a lot from those positions. So, if we can establish a healthy running game and, you know, Hunter and Randall and Smith all being healthy games and then, you know, start working play action, Blackman's just going to run past people. It's just a certainty to me that, I mean, with the way that they play and the way that they, you know what I mean, they're looking for that run and they're looking for to stop a play, they're going to overcompensate. And, yeah, I think Blackman will have a pretty big day. As long as Whedon can stay accurate, I think a lot of our receivers are going to see some good, you know, 20-yard gains, 20 to, you know, 40-yard gains. I really do. Because we're going to see some good chunk plays, basically.
Absolutely.
And I think that's what's going to happen.
They're not good against the run either. I mean, they're just not. I mean, I'm not saying they don't have players. They've got players on the defensive side of the ball, but they're not. It's not that dominant defense. They give up points in chunks. They disappear at times. They've been burned with the run and the pass. I mean, they don't scare me like they have in the past. There's nothing there that just makes me think, wow, you know, we really need to watch X.
I think they're,
whatever, you know.
I mean, watching them at the line, their front four is pretty good. I mean, they get a good push and everything, but given the makeup of our offense, if I was going to pick any level of the defense to be good, I'd want it to be the front four because our offensive line has been able to handle about anyone. And I'd rather them be thin at linebacker and secondary where we can exploit those weaknesses and, you know, maybe they get a little bit more of a push than some teams have been getting on us at the line. But, I mean, with the way our offensive line's been playing, I'm not too worried about anyone's front four, honestly. So.
No.
Well, I mean, you miss a lot when you graduate a guy like Gerald McCoy. I mean,
Yeah.
That's just that. I guess he didn't graduate. Did he come out for his junior year? I think he did.
I don't know.
Either way, he's gone. I mean, you don't replace a guy like that, just like you don't replace a guy like Sue for Nebraska. So I think that, you know what I mean, as good as their front four is, I think it's adequate. I don't think it's dominating like it has been in the past. So.
Oh, for an OU defense, it's not. I mean, it's obviously nothing like what we saw last year, and our offense is nothing like what it was last year either. I mean, I don't think a shutout's even a concern at all, but or even a low-scoring thing, but it's definitely one of the weaker OU defenses we've come up against in a while. But
I think so. I don't think they have anyone even in the ballpark of Prince or, I mean, I don't – and look what Blackman did there.
Aaron Williams?
Yeah.
Aaron Williams for Texas? Yeah. I don't think they do. So
I don't think they're – even close. So
what about
what
about the other side of the ball? Because I think, I mean, I think you'd be crazy to think we're going to score less than our normal 34 plus against these guys. So, are we going to be able to stop their short passing attack / run around the outside misdirection run that they seem to run over and over? And I still can't figure out why it's so difficult to stop, but. Royal, what do you think? Are we gonna be able to stop their offense?
Yeah, I think so. I think it's kind of weird to me. I'm really curious to see what Billy Young's gonna do because you know going into the game that at least 70 to 80% of their passes are only for like 3 to 5 yard gains because that's all they do. They run little short routes, either their tiny slants or their bubble screens or their passes into the flat. And it seems like, you know, like against Baylor and against Texas, when they tried doing those things, we swarmed them. So,
yes.
Well, I think they compare style-wise kind of favorably to Baylor without the mobile quarterback. Like the things they try to do seem pretty similar.
I think they're very much like Baylor. Yeah.
I hope it ends up being the same way then because I mean, what we did to Baylor, I mean, it looked like every single time Baylor tried to do that pass out into the flat, like, we already knew it was coming. And, like, there was a guy, like, jumping through the pass, trying to knock it away, and he knew it was coming.
It's better athletes and all. I mean, theoretically, everyone runs sort of the same scheme. It's the better athletes that execute it. But it's just, when you're trying to compare, I mean, it seems like we've matched up pretty well with those sort of dink and dunk style passing teams thus far this year, so which I think is a positive sign.
You know, the thing that I will say that it concerns me a little bit is I do like Royals. I think he's a solid wide receiver. I think he can get down the field, and you know, I don't think Landry Jones is a great quarterback, but if we can, if we don't get enough pressure on Jones and we give him enough time to just air it out, this could be, you know, he could be up for a fairly big day or night. And I don't think we've seen, I mean, looking back, have we seen, when's the last time we saw a receiver that was in the same ballpark as a Broyles? Maybe Fuller?
Yeah.
It's been a long time.
Different time. Different type of wide receiver, though. I mean, Broyles is more of like the quick, elusive. Fuller is just a big, physical, bruising guy.
Might almost compare more to like that dude from Troy or something, even though he's a little bigger.
Yeah, I would say that. I think that's a really fair comparison. I'd say that's about right.
Uh-huh.
But as far as pressuring Landry Jones goes, I mean, the guy is already scared shitless. If you've ever watched him play on the road, He, anytime there's a blitz coming and he sees it coming, like, he immediately gets out of the pocket. Like, he doesn't even trust his offensive line to sit in there, make his reads, and make a throw. He'll run to one side of the field and completely, you know what I mean, just block off all the routes on the other side. He's just such a pussy about getting hit. He really is. And I think a lot of that comes from last year, because the offensive line wasn't very good, and he was running for his life the majority of the time. But I think a lot of it spilled over to how he reacts this year. Because, I mean, and I noticed it, especially in that A&M game. I mean, the Blitzers didn't even necessarily get through. They may have been stopped at the line of scrimmage, but it didn't matter. He was still bluffing himself from the pocket because he was just being a little girl about it. I mean, I know it's a rivalry and, you know, talking shit and all that stuff, but, I mean, seriously, he was kind of a girl, staying in the pocket, keeping his composure, and making his reads. He just got out of there with the quickness and, you know, tucked tail and ran.
So what do you think about us shutting him down? I guess we kind of strayed on a tangent there, but, I mean, what do you think we can hold him to? Or what do you think we can do to hold him, I guess?
Well, just pressure him. You know what I mean? Bring those blitzes. I mean, make sure he sees them. If he can see them, and if he gets afraid, or if, you know what I mean, he thinks they're coming, I think that's the best thing you can do. And then, as far as, you know, cutting off those small passes, you know, we just have to do the same thing that we did with Texas and Baylor, which is the first that it gets there, you don't necessarily have to tackle them. Just hold them there for a couple seconds, if that. And three guys are going to go over and gang tackle. And I think that's been the biggest key. If it gets into the 40s, I don't think they can win. I think if it's a shootout situation, I do not think that they can put up the same points we can. So,
no.
Yeah.
Well, I've got an interesting stat. So OU is the number one. They've got more punts in the Big 12 than any other team.
I saw that.
Iowa State is second. So basically, what that tells me is they have more drives stall out than any other team in the Big 12. If you're punting the ball more, you're not moving the ball. And I think if that trend continues, which I think it will, there's literally no way you can keep up with the Oklahoma State offense. I don't think they're going to slow us down offensively enough to counter the fact they punt the ball so much. So, Trey Sway, he's a great punter, sure, but it's not going to help him offensively. I think we do. I honestly think we hold them. I mean, I think they're going to score some points. I mean, Broyles is going to get his. You look at DeMarco Murray, you know, they're not a good running team, but they get him involved. I think they're probably each good for a touchdown, maybe two. But I don't see them doing much more than that.
I kind of look at it. If you look at the games where they had problems moving the ball, most notably, I guess, Missouri and A&M somewhat, it seems to be the quick linebackers. If you can shut down that underneath stuff, which is what kind of we've been talking about, I mean, they really only have three guys that catch the ball. You know, like I used to wonder for years what was so difficult about stopping that Texas Tech attack. But the main problem was you didn't know who to cover. I mean, the
right.
scheme itself is very simple, but they can throw it to six different guys. So where do you overload anything? Whereas with OU, like, mm-hmm. I mean, I was watching that Baylor game the other night, and I don't know how many times I yelled at the TV, you know, just questioning why they don't have somebody spying Murray. I mean, I don't know how many damn times that guy can leak out of the backfield and catch a little pass. And it's not like they're designed screens. That's the check down.
No.
And it's, I mean, no. I think if we can contain that kind of stuff, it's not like they've got so many options to throw it to that we just don't have, we don't have anything to match up with. I mean, obviously you got to watch Broyles. Obviously you got to watch Stills or whatever. And then after that, they throw it to backs for the most part. And
they throw it to Murray can, they'll get him involved in the passing game as much as anyone. And so.
Oh, yeah.
You definitely have to account for him because he's good. I've said all year, I don't think he's a good running back by any stretch, but he's good in the backfield and he's a good player. And when he has the ball, it's kind of, I think it'll be a little throwback to, Terrell Jernigan, where it's just like, you know, when they throw him that ball in the backfield, it's going to be tense because he can break it. He's dangerous. He's fast. He's kind of – it looked to be against Baylor like he kind of had his burst back. I think he's been struggling all year. He looked really fast, and granted, it was Baylor. But, you know, those are the three. I mean, I think Landry Jones doesn't scare me at all, but Murray in the passing game, Broyles downfield, and you may even throw Stills in there kind of underneath. We can contain those guys, I think we'll be in really, really good shape.
So his molest stash doesn't scare you at all?
No.
He probably has
not at all.
Todd, windowless van outside, so there's free candy on it.
I'm almost to the point where I'm kind of feel sorry for the guy. I mean, he seems, I don't know, he seems weird.
He's not terrible. His stats are actually pretty comparable to Whedon's, which is they have the same amount of touchdowns, about the same amount of, I think they have both have like, I think Whedon has 9 picks and he has 7, and Whedon has like 300 more yards. I mean, their stats are actually pretty comparable, which is interesting. It's just a different way of going about it. You know, I think in the OU offense, I mean, Josh Fields would probably have about the same stats as, not that Fields is a terrible quarterback, but he's not, it's not at Whedon's level, obviously. They just run a different kind of scheme. I mean, it's a different thing. Whedon really makes this offense work. And I think that's where that, you obviously, we have no issue with putting the load on Whedon and saying, win this game for us, do this for us. And, I mean, at least judging by the fan base of OU, they would be nervous about just coming out and saying, put the load on Landry Jones, obviously.
Absolutely.
I don't think they have that kind of faith in him. But.
No.
But, I mean, outside of that, they sort of run a similar offense to what we run without the ability to throw it downfield. I mean, it's just talent-wise, I don't know if they're quite as good. I guess they're pretty comparable when you go player by player. But, I mean, in reality, Murray's used a lot like Randall's used, except he's more the primary back. Moses, I mean, kind of has that quickness like he had that sick run against Baylor, by the way, where he kind of tripoded on his arm. I don't know if anyone was watching the Baylor game, but had a sick run against them. But he's a shifty dude. He's quick. And then they've obviously got the lights-out go-to receiver, who actually has more catches than Blackman, but just doesn't, you know, most of his catches are 3 yards and whatever you can do afterwards. So it's just a different type
they
of thing.
They throw more horizontal balls than any team in the NCAA.
Yeah, I think than even Tech used to with the under elite. I mean, that used to drive me crazy how often Tech would do it, and I think OU might do it more. It'd be a curious stat to see, like,
God,
how far a ball travels downfield for the season, like average downfield length of a pass.
Yeah, it's unbelievable.
Okay, what about, so, I mean, matchup-wise, I think, I mean, everyone kind of agrees that we would probably have the advantage, I think, but what about the whole, I mean, one thing I will say, Oklahoma State throughout this season, we've come out pretty level for most games. I mean, whether we start out slow, start out quick, and then, you know, switch throughout the game, what have you, we really haven't no-showed at any game. I mean, our worst performances, A&M and Nebraska, we still, I mean, we obviously won the A&M game. We showed up at Nebraska, just couldn't pull through in the end. And the Troy game being the second game, I mean, you can count that a lot to just new guys getting used to everything. But
yeah.
I mean, but OU is pretty much the stark opposite of that, who's looked, I mean, like, you know, after the first couple games and even preseason, I really thought OU was, I mean, even though they had a close game early, I really thought they were national title contenders. I mean, I kind of liked the talent on their team, and they've just been up and down, up and down, up and down. I mean, even though they're 9-2, they play a great game, and then they play a terrible game. So
yeah,
what does everyone think about their, I mean, that aspect of OU? Is it, are we, I mean, I hate to say they can dictate whether they win or lose, but in a way, they can dictate whether it's a close game or we blow them out, is kind of what I think.
Mm-hmm. I agree with that.
Yeah, I think that our team, I think that OSU is a lot more consistent than they are. I think they're a lot more dependable. What you see at home for OSU is the same OSU you're going to see on the road. I don't think there's a drop-off. I don't think there's a heightened, and I think that's what you're kind of alluding to, that, like, you know, you don't see a huge performance at home and then they go on the road and then they, you know what I mean,
right,
the talent drops off or something like that. And I think that's always been kind of OU's thing is, you know, they're indestructible at home and then you get them on the road and all of a sudden they're, you know, they fall apart. I mean, and I thought it was the most evident last year when, you know, if they played that Texas Tech team at home, they probably would have killed them. They go to Lubbock and they just got handled.
Mm-hmm.
And that
yeah.
was just all there was to it. I mean, they were down however many scores before they even got a touchdown. I mean, it was six. So, I mean, I think that that's going a long way this year, and I think that, you know, them going to Baylor and taking care of business the way they did, it's, I think it's a combination of two things. One, Baylor just is not that good, especially on defense. And the other, they probably got sick and tired of hearing out that they were on the road and decided to turn it on. But either way, I don't think that's going to necessarily affect what they do this weekend just because it's a whole different team. It's a whole different talent level. So the athletes are a whole lot better.
Yeah.
But as far as what you're saying, I mean, yeah, I think it'll go a long way. I think that them being on the road definitely has an effect. And I think that it definitely comes down to Larry Jones. I mean, how he
yeah.
plays on the road as opposed to how he plays at home. And if we can get pressure on him, we can scare them out of the pocket, it's going to affect their offense in a big way.
Agreed. I think we're going to know pretty early how OU will perform. And
mm-hmm.
I do think you look at their road performances. To your point earlier, I think Landry Jones he struggles in kind of hostile environments. And it's going to be insane in Stillwater at 7 o'clock on a Saturday night.
41,000 strong.
Oh, here we go.
Deal
here we go.
You have to throw it out there once.
Oh, I know. I started the article just because.
I know. You wrote it.
Yeah. Well, it's just one of those things, you know. I mean, you've got to talk about it. It's out there. It's the biggest game that OSU has played in a really, really long time. And, you know, a lot of people aren't necessarily happy that they can't go see it. But at the same time, you know, OSU wants full-season fans, not just Bedlam
yeah.
fans.
That's the most
yeah,
polarizing
I mean,
issue, too. And, like, even internally within myself, I change
yeah.
my viewpoint on that, like, every week. Like, I mean, one week I think it's great, and the next week I think it's a horrible policy. I mean, I flip-flop within. I can't even lock into a decision of if I love it or not. It's, I mean, I almost didn't even know how to vote in that poll because I still don't know if I like it or not. I mean, it's an interesting way to go about it. It's not like we're the only school that does it. I mean, at least the premium game thing. I mean, there's plenty that do the same thing, so.
Yeah.
I just think it's crazy because there has to be some kind of solution. And the thing is, you want to keep OU fans out. And that's what a lot of OSU fans don't realize. They're like, oh, you know, it should be single game tickets for this game so that a lot of OSU fans can fill up the stadium. That's not going to happen.
No.
What's going to happen is you're going to see 10 to 15,000 Sooner fans in there.
Yeah.
And there goes home field advantage. That's,
you know, what I was thinking before? I don't remember. Maybe I was talking with you about this once, Cincy, but the vouching plan for these premium games, like, you have to have two season ticket holders vouch for you, and then you can get a ticket.
Like, yeah.
That's your only way. It's like there's some system. They can set it up electronically where every season ticket holder has their own login, and they can vouch for, like, up to four tickets or something. They can vouch for who they get sold to.
Yeah, or just give the season ticket holders tickets to sell. I mean,
yeah, that's essentially what it is. It's the same theory.
Yeah. I think the bottom line with that whole thing, though, is it's working. And I don't think, if you look at it just from if you look at it, it's just a black and white issue, it works. And, yeah. it sucks that you can't walk up to the ticket office and buy tickets for this game, but, it's working. And we're selling more season tickets than we have, and I have no doubt we'll sell a ton more next year. I think, it really boils down to the product on the field, and it's working, and the product's getting better. So
the base of season ticket holders, how much it's built up. I mean, I don't know the numbers, but to have 42 or 44 or whatever it is now, and whatever,
yeah.
I don't even know what it was before this policy went in 5 years ago or so. But I mean, before all this stuff went,
10,000.
Yeah,
it's,
I mean,
increased by at least 10,000.
Yeah, I'm surprised it's only that. I mean, I would think we may have been at 20,000 before, and now we're at 45 or whatever. I mean, it definitely adds to that, but it does. I mean, I can see the argument against it as well, but it's.
Well, here's the thing: people have to realize that people get so personally offended by it, and people need to realize that Holder is not your best friend. Like, his job is not to appease you. His job is to run the athletic department and do whatever he can to build it and get financially stable, to increase the athletic budget. And when you can get more revenue and you can increase season ticket sales, and therefore you can better fund recruiting, better fund, fixing, shit around. You know what I mean? Like, buying uniforms for the smaller unseen sports. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
Soccer uniforms, things like that. People don't realize these season ticket sales directly affect that. They directly affect our coaches' salaries. Like, the fact that we're going to be able to give Holgerson such a hefty raise, which I'm sure we will, for next year or however long he's going to stay, is because, of the revenue. People need to realize that if you want this kind of product on the field, you have to be willing to pay a price. And this is part of it. I mean, and if you don't like it, then, I'm sorry. There are a lot of other single games you can go to. You don't have to go to the OU game, but if you want to go to the OU game, make the commitment of getting the season tickets. That's it.
Yeah, and I think that's all it is. I mean, you're doing what works best for the whole as opposed to the exceptions that are out there. And, I mean, that's what you have to do is try. You can't please everyone, so you might as well try to please the biggest percentage and not have your stadium full of, 30%. Red.
Red. Yeah.
So, I mean, it's
stuff. I mean,
unfortunately.
Like that.
Yeah.
People
forget.
They have such a short memory that, they don't remember that, it used to sell out all the time when it was single fan tickets. Well, that's because it was filled with OU fans, and it was awful. It was awful.
We're not the program that a lot of fans like to think we are. I mean, I hate to say that. I don't mean that to sound as bad as it is, but
it's realistic.
I mean, we have a very, very dedicated small following, and I think a lot of people think that the average OSU alumni is as dedicated as they are, or what, you know what I mean, and it's just not necessarily the case. And when you're basically pulling only from an alumni base, unfortunately we're not OU in Nebraska, and as OU fans love to point out this week, which is still, not to get off on another point, but my least favorite take of all time. Anything you try to talk about this season boils down to, historically, we're a better football program than you are. Is basically And I love that.
What the hell does that have to do with this year?
Right.
Historically, we had won in Austin or in Lubbock since 1944. That didn't stop us from going down there and smashing them.
I just agree with it usually. I mean, it's, you are. I don't see how that's how that's even a I mean, it's not even a debate worth having. Like, how would I even debate that? You know, it's not even a, there's not even two sides to that in any way. But it's a, but I mean, back to, I mean, we're just not those types of programs. We're just, we sell what we can. We, I mean, I think it's a good policy for what we have right now. Maybe 10 years from now it's not, but right now it is. Oh.
We still have Cincy. Cincy, you there?
I haven't heard anything. I think that dog got him.
Cincy's gone.
There's a difficulty on his end. It's becoming a tradition. It's like watching Shane Jarko limp off the field. It's a weekly tradition.
It is. Wow, that was probably the best analogy you could come up with for that.
Yeah.
Almost a certainty. Oh, yeah, since he's down on the turf again.
Yeah, there he is. He's the Shane Jarko. I mean, he's solid interior help. You know, when he's on the field, he's great. He really anchors the middle of that line, but you know he's going down at some point.
Oh, you unreliable fuck, Cincy.
Yeah, he is.
You're listening to this podcast now, and you're an unreliable dick. Get a better phone.
Yeah, that. Do all that. So I guess we're good, unless you got anything else, unless you want to comment on Mr. Pelini or the Nebraska game in any way. I don't know if I want to give that any more attention than it already has gotten, but.
No, it's, I mean, you know, we don't even really know anything yet. I'm really curious to see how they come out against Colorado this week, but it's, you know, I mean, it's, things aren't really, looking too beat out there right now. I mean, it just seems like they're on a downward trend as the season continues, and it just doesn't help that Pelini just can't control himself on the sideline. I mean, it's just a lunatic, but we'll see. I mean, it's really weird. I mean, I don't know who to blame more, Martinez or him, because apparently Martinez isn't exactly the, you know, teammate's favorite either.
Yeah, I guess he's kind of not liked. I've been thinking about that, you know, today. I was trying to put my place in, because, you know, it's like going to any Nebraska site today, which was really exciting to do the last couple of days, by the way. I feel like reading insane comments and articles and everything and message board posts. But it's like, if I was in that spot, I don't know what I would think either about. I mean, you kind of have to defend him and you kind of have to go along with it and say you got screwed and maybe there's a conspiracy and that's why he was upset. And I mean, it's weird, it's almost like a soap opera going on there. It's really bizarre. You got like some of the most thick-headed, loyal following of a fan base, maybe in the country, you know, matched up with something that they're going to have to admit some faults with somebody they love. And it's,
somebody, I mean, has to be blamed. So I don't know. We'll see. I mean, the chancellor apparently reprimanded him and, having to sit down with him. So, I don't know. We'll see how that goes this weekend. But, I mean, obviously we have bigger fish to fry in our own stadium. So,
yeah. Well, all right. Well, I think that's good then. We'll wrap it up. Cowboys Ride Free, Podcast 12, out.